Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie and John here with our last show before Christmas 2023. How's it going, man?
Dude, how is that possible? I feel like just yesterday it was December of 2022.
Yeah, it's
went by fast, man.
Yeah, it's been an oddly fast year. We've gotten a lot done. We produced two new shows, complete seasons of those, and rocking on the True Crime Cast. And I think we have a doozy today.
Yeah, we do. And we're putting out the second season of Left on Dead soon. We're in the production stage of that.
I'm so excited about that.
Dude, I felt like our Left on Dead story was really good. And then we created Left on Dead 2. And I feel like sequels are hard to...
Yeah.
They're hard to match the first one, but I think we're going to do it.
Continuing the story with a new main character who we have already cast and writing it with him in mind. And I'm excited about that.
It is awesome. We have so many characters in mind and so many great actors in mind to play them. So I'm really excited for Left on Dead season 2 coming to you sometime early 2024.
Yeah, early, mid. We'll see. We'll see how fast we get it done. I mean,
if your boy over here would start writing a little bit more,
you'll get there.
Myself.
Got a couple of thank yous, a couple shout outs to give for 5-star reviews that came in over on Apple Podcasts. This comes from Kel Stevens. 34. I've been listening to this podcast since the very first episode they did on Talk is Jericho. After hearing the way they present each episode, I was hooked. Now I listen to Bless Their Hearts and I binge Paradigm, phenomenal shows in their own right. I feel like I know Jamie and John, but I've never met them. Keep up the great work, gentlemen. That was Kel Stevens, 34.
Thank you, Kel Stevens, 34. That was awesome. Thank you.
Very kind. This comes from Faye J. Verheyen. I hope I did okay. This is from Australia because they're suggesting a case here.
All right, let's hear it.
Says, my boys, love listening to you guys on my way to work. Found the show by accident and went back to the beginning and have finally caught up. Would love for you to cover an Australian case, Carmel Gianasca. And then in parentheses, it says, sorry, John, it's a hard name. She is missing and her story isn't well known. That's one we can add to the list. Carmel Gianasca. And this is from Faye J. Verheyen, I think.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try to say it, but I love that they can still give us a decent review, you know, like a good review. Because early on, if people heard me mispronounce something, they would just jump all over us in the comments.
We still get those occasionally. Like, I think it's, it's endearing for a lot of people.
Yeah, I feel like if you listen for years or have listened and binge listened, maybe you love us and can give me a little grace like this gentleman, lady or gentleman, I don't know.
This person. This Australian. How about that?
My mate. Is that okay to say?
I don't know.
Oh, things got weird. I'm sorry accent. I made it weird.
All good.
Like I said, if you have binge listened to everything we've already done and you want more content, then don't forget about Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get access to a brand new bonus episode exclusive to Patreon members. And you get early ad-free content from our main show. It's an incredible deal. We have 6 years worth of bonus episodes over there. Go check it out. $3 a month is nothing in today's economy, and we have not raised our prices.
There we go. No inflation over here. We appreciate you guys, and we'll keep putting solid content over there as well. John, why don't you go ahead and get us rolling?
All right, guys, we are going to talk about a tale that spans over 5 decades. Jamie, I think I sent this to you on TikTok, but I think maybe your wife did too.
I think she got to me first, but yeah, it was intriguing enough where I got it multiple places.
So this is just an awesome story. And I say that because no one is going to get murdered. Right.
So I mean, nobody as of yet. The story's still developing a little, so hopefully not.
It is. I mean, this would make a great movie if it hasn't already. Right. But this is about a guy's life that spanned 5 decades in this crime. It's a life full of deception, mystery, And then at the end, an astonishing revelation. We're going to be talking about the story of Thomas Randall. This was a man who lived a double life, and his daughter Ashley, who unveiled the truth after her father's passing. So this story unfolds in March of 2021 when Thomas was battling lung cancer, and he made a staggering confession to his daughter Ashley in a suburb of Boston. He revealed to her that he was not Thomas Randall, but Theodore Conrad. And Theodore, who again is Thomas, so this guy was a fugitive who for over half a century executed a daring bank robbery, made off with $215,000, and then disappeared only to later surface as her father.
Yeah, well, it's certainly possible for people to change their identities. I think it probably was easier to do back then, but rarely do we see anybody live their entire life without getting found out or getting some hint of it, somebody tracking them down, or we just don't find out about it because they never reveal who they are. So this is certainly a unique situation. So let's talk about Thomas using his original name here for a little bit. He is, like you said, Theodore Ted Conrad. He was born on July 10th of 1949 in Denver, Colorado. His parents were Edward and Ruth Beth Conrad. Fairly unique name there, which will come into play later. They got divorced while Ted was in elementary school, and he ended up moving with his mom and his sister to Lakewood, Ohio. And he had two other siblings as well, so a pretty big family, and they kind of split down the middle when the divorce happened. It said that Ted was very bright in school. He allegedly had an IQ of 135. John, my IQ is so low, I don't even know how good that is.
I mean, it's very, very high. Not yours, his, to be clear.
I mean, I think everybody knows that.
You know that mine's lower than yours. We have fans leaving comments about how I can't say words.
I don't know. Your IQ doesn't measure your vernacular. He graduated from Lakewood High School in 1967 and went on to New England College, where his father taught as an assistant professor. He ultimately dropped out of New England College and moved back to Ohio, where he started attending Cuyahoga Community College, and he got a job at the Society National Bank in Cleveland.
So it's what happened after he started working at that bank that led to what Ashley found out. So she started a Google search, and she typed in Ted Conrad missing, and she found, I guess another word would be to say that she opened Pandora's box, right? So what she learned was that on Friday, July 11th of 1969, one day after her father's 20th birthday, Ted went to his job at the headquarters of Society National Bank, which was located. So Ted worked in the vault as a teller, and he literally counted money and packaged money every day to be distributed to other branches in the area. And by all accounts, he was a good-looking man. He was very intelligent. So he was very much the picture-perfect man for this job. He was very hardworking, and he was trusted. And you have to have an enormous amount of trust to work in the vault packaging money all day to be given out to everybody's branches.
You have access to so much cash. Yeah, you have to have a lot of trust. And I think, I don't know, you just have to be the kind of guy who they see as a potential leader and somebody who's going to take good care of the money. And boy, did he.
Well, he had just turned 20 years old. So on this day, he went to work. And then on his break, he went out and he bought a bottle of whiskey and some cigarettes. Then he went back to the bank vault. He quietly put $215,000, which would be worth about $1.7 million in today's cash. He put that money into a paper bag, put the cigarettes and whiskey on top, and then walked out of the bank, never to return again.
He had just turned 20. How did he buy whiskey?
I think back then the legal drinking age was 18.
Yeah, I don't know when that changed over. That's kind of why I was asking. So when you ask anybody who knew Ted when he was younger around this same time, they will tell you that he was absolutely obsessed with a film called The Thomas Crown Affair. The movie came out in 1968, and it starred Steve McQueen. So it had only been out for about a year when this robbery took place. You may be more familiar with the remake that came out in 1999, starring Pierce Brosnan. But the plot's largely the same. It's a classic, wonderfully done heist movie. I'm a huge fan of heist movies, the Ocean 11 movies, the Gone in 60 Seconds, pretty much anything where there's a heist. I am immediately intrigued. In this particular story of Thomas Crown, there's a perfect plan put into place. And the big draw, perhaps, is the main character, Thomas Crown, didn't need the money. He was already a millionaire. He was pulling off this heist just to prove to himself and maybe the people around him that he could get away with it. And that's exactly what Ted Conrad set out to do when he committed this crime. This robbery took place on a Friday, and because he was the one responsible for counting the vault money, nobody even noticed until Monday when he didn't show up for work and they noticed all that cash was gone. After fleeing the bank, he would end up sending two letters back to his girlfriend named Kathy in the days after the robbery. One of those was postmarked from Washington, D.C., and then the second one that he sent was postmarked from Los Angeles. She ended up turning both letters over to the police, even though the letter said, "Don't give this to the police." It's also clear in the letters that Ted seemed to believe that there was a statute of limitations of 7 years on this robbery, and he could come back to his normal life after 7 years, which he ultimately figured out wasn't the case, but he referred to that many times in these letters. So authorities had a name. They knew who committed this crime. They had the identity of the thief, but these letters didn't really send them in to a place where they could readily find him. And after that, it was like he vanished into thin air.
Isn't that crazy that they had their man?
Yeah.
But they could not find him.
Usually finding the identity of a person is the hard part.
Yeah. They had their guy, except they didn't. They didn't know where he was. So the week after his disappearance, something pretty major happened in America. We put a man on the moon for the first time. And because of that, Ted Conrad's headlines were buried. They were, you know, everybody's focus definitely switched to what America was doing in our lunar program.
I doubt that he had that planned, but it worked out really well in his favor to where there wasn't a nationwide manhunt because everybody was excited that we allegedly, depending on who you ask, put a man on the moon.
Well, and then a few years later, it resurfaced briefly when a little known case with a man named D.B. Cooper basically hijacked a plane, and there were some comparisons between the two. They both got money and vanished without a trace. But largely, this case was forgotten, aside from the officers who were looking for him. Now, there were episodes on America's Most Wanted, Unsolved Mysteries, and some other crime mystery shows. Tips were called in from all over the country, but for the most part, the case went completely cold. Now, Thomas Randall, who we know again as Ashley's father, and of course it's Ted, he lived a seemingly normal life. He was a car salesman at a luxury car dealership. He was selling Volvos and Land Rovers, just making a killing. And then he was also a golf pro at the Rimbrook Country Club. What city was he in, Jamie?
Yeah, this was in Lynnfield, Massachusetts.
I definitely just set you up because I certainly can't say that word.
I get it. I didn't even, never cross my mind when I put that in your section. But yeah, he was a golf pro. Apparently he was really good at golf. How do you get that good at golf when you're trying to, I don't know, keep a low profile?
I don't know. Not a lot of police on golf courses.
Apparently not.
They're too busy protecting and serving.
When we get back from a break, we'll talk more about what happened in the transition from Ted Conrad to Thomas Randall. I don't want to go ahead and cut off before we give a big shout out to one of our favorite sponsors, Magic Mind. John, especially this time of year, the days are short, and I find myself being constantly tired.
Absolutely, I've been tired. And on top of every other thing I do, like a dad, a business owner, and an employee, we've also added the craziness of being in a play together for the first time. So at the end of a long day, I'm not tired anymore thanks to Magic Mind, and I'm able to go in, rehearse, do the parts of my play, and remember it all, And I swear I don't think I would have been able to do that without the help of Magic Mind.
We saved Christmas and Ebenezer Scrooge because of Magic Mind. And honestly, there's a boosted energy level. There's boosted cognitive ability, or at least thoughtfulness on my part. And there's no crash. Any other supplement I've taken that has helped to give me energy has subsequently made me crash. Magic Mind doesn't do that.
I love the ashwagandha in it. Like I've always said, I've taken ashwagandha by itself, but the ashwagandha in this paired with all the other things, I swear I just live a less chaotic, stressful life. And the only thing I've changed is adding Magic Mind to my daily routine.
I don't think it's understating to use the word life-changing, like, or life-altering. It absolutely changed the way that I feel throughout the day, every day. And now you can get a discount on Magic Mind by going to magicmind.com/truecrimecast and entering the code CRIMECAST to get 50% off if you go and use that in the next 10 days. This code will be good forever. For 20% off in the next 10 days, you can get it for 50% off, or Magic Mind has just struck up a deal with a local store.
Yeah, starting in January, you'll find it all in Sprouts Farmers Market stores across the country. If you have a Sprouts store nearby, get down there, grab a few bottles to try, and after you're hooked, you can get a subscription with up to 50% off at magicmind.com/truecrimecast with our code TRUECRIMECAST.
So we know that he went to Washington, D.C., where he sent a letter from, and then he sent a letter from Los Angeles. But we don't hear anything from Ted, of course, now Tom. We're going to keep calling him Ted, until 1982, when he married his wife, Kathy. Now, that is allegedly the first official document that we have from him. And she gave birth to Ashley, who is ultimately the person that Ted had confessed to, and this would be their only daughter. Ted had a fake birth certificate that was from July 10th of 1947. So that's the exact same as his actual birth date, except 2 years older. So he appeared to be 2 years older than he was, kind of just changing his birth date to maybe throw off the scent of somebody looking for him. As far as anybody knows, he never told anybody about this before he told Ashley his true identity, just literally a couple months before he died from lung cancer. There are no friends who came forward to say, yeah, I knew about it. There are no family members that came forward to say. We received letters from him throughout the years. He kept it completely to himself for decades. But there was one detective who spent nearly half of his entire career looking for Ted Conrad.
This is really my favorite part of the story. So that guy's name was Detective John Elliott. He was a U.S. Marshal who lived near Cleveland, Ohio at the time of this heist. And he personally took on the Ted Conrad case, and he worked it as an active case until he retired in 1990. Dude, I mean, I don't handle these kinds of investigations, but you never forget your cases. Like, I remember kids that I worked with 12 years ago. You could tell me their name and I could tell you stuff about them, but like, ask me what I had for dinner yesterday and I have no idea. But he retired not having solved this crime, and I bet that bugged him long after his retirement. But what's really cool about this story is that his son, John's son Peter, went on to become a federal marshal and was ultimately the one to close the case. And he had this to say about his father's work on this case. He said, "My father never stopped searching for Conrad and always wanted closure up until his death in 2020. Elliot said in a news release, he went on to say, "I hope my father is resting a little easier today, knowing that this investigation and this United States Marshal Service brought closure to a decades-long mystery. Everything in real life doesn't always end like we see in the movies," end quote. And dude, that's exactly the way that I picture this, to say that John Elliott worked this case almost his whole career, and then his son would be the U.S. Marshal to take the reins and close the case. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it should be a movie. Obviously, the heist itself was inspired by the Thomas Crown Affair, but it's this piece. I think the movie could focus on the Elliott family and their search for Ted Conrad. And he I mean, just a couple years before he was caught, he almost lived long enough to see it solved.
Peter even remembered, like, if he was at home having dinner with his dad would say, "Hey, pass me the mashed potatoes." And where is Ted Conrad? Like, everyone in his family knew he was obsessed with trying to find Ted Conrad. Peter continued to support efforts to find Conrad. And when they closed the case, he signed the official paperwork with his name, followed by the phrase, "on behalf of John Elliott." And that had to be a really cool moment for Peter there.
That's got to be almost like a mic drop to be able to walk off into the sunset. I don't know that Peter's ready to retire, but if that's the last thing he ever did as a U.S. Marshal, I think he could retire a happy man.
I mean, I don't want to be morbid, but like, if I had that kind of relationship with my dad and I closed the case that he opened, I would visit his grave that day and just let him know, dude, I finished what you started, man.
That's the end of the movie. You walk up to the grave and say, "case closed," and music plays as you walk away.
Yeah.
Hollywood, hit us up. Apparently, his daughter Ashley quickly started investigating her father's background, even though when he told her, he asked her, "don't look into this, don't go digging, but I need you to know it." And Ashley believes that she's the one that her father confessed this to because he thought that she could handle it without freaking out, without doing all kinds of panicky things that could ultimately possibly get her and the family in trouble. And she had an interview pretty early on with the Boston Globe about kind of how it went when she first heard her father's take. And let's hear that conversation right now.
It was the like early spring, February, March of 21. Mm-hmm. We found out that he had lung cancer. And for him, I think maybe that's when it really clicked that he didn't have 5 or 8 years. Like the doctors had said before the treatment that like, it was soon, end of March, beginning of April. Mm-hmm. The three of us were just in the living room watching TV. I think we were watching NCIS because that was his favorite show. Mm-hmm. And he really, like, just out of the blue was like, "so ladies, just in case something ever comes up about this, I don't want to talk about it. I'm just telling you, I did have to change my name when I was younger because of a reason. And the authorities are probably still looking for me. I don't want to talk about it, but just in case, I don't want you to be completely blindsided." Okay. And then literally like went back to his show. And then the longer I sat with it, I was like, well, if that's true, then so his name isn't Tom Randall. So what's my name? Ashley Randall. And so the next day is when just one-on-one, I went to him and I said, "you know, I know you don't want to talk about it, but you have to, because I deserve to know what my dad's name is. I deserve to know your name." I was like, "and I deserve to know my name."
Yeah.
And he really didn't want to talk about it, but he finally, you know, like acquiesced and said, "okay, but if I tell you, you have to promise that you won't look into it at all. Like, I'll tell you my name and then that's it. And then we're done."
Yeah.
Wow. And I said, "sure." And he said, "you know, like, my name is Ted."
Wow.
And then I like was like, and it was like, I remember he just looked so pained. Like, he's like, "please don't ask me this." And he finally just really quietly said, "Conrad." It was that night or the night after. It's like 2:30 in the morning. I'm wide awake. I'm in my childhood bedroom.
Yeah.
And I finally was like, "no, I just got to look. I have to know. I have to know. How can I not know?"
Yeah.
And I Googled Ted Conrad. I think I put in missing after. So I was like, "Ted Conrad missing?" Because like, he's obviously changed his name 50 years ago.
Yeah. And
the first thing that popped up at like the top of Google was something that was like vault teller robs bank. And then a picture of this young kid. And I was like, "oh my God."
So, John, how ironic is it that they were watching a cop show? They were watching NCIS, and he's like, "oh, yeah, I'm a wanted fugitive and have been for the last 5 years."
You ever read the Edgar Allan Poe book, The Telltale Heart?
Oh, yeah.
Like when a guy has done he did a horrific crime in the book, but this is still not a little thing that old Teddy Boy has done. How could you live 50 years without telling someone? My goodness, what a vault of a man.
That boggles my mind. I mean, he used to work in a vault. So Ashley would go tell her mother more about what happened, and she was obviously shocked. She had been married to this man for almost 40 years and had no idea who it was. I know every relationship is different, every marriage is different, but I feel like there are usually conversations about you sharing stories from growing up or sharing stories from your family, referring to places and people from your upbringing. How did he navigate all of those conversations about his family, about his school, about his jobs without letting her in on it?
And wouldn't it be weird that there are like no family members that you're visiting? Like, what's the story on his mom and dad? Did he have any siblings? Like, this guy has no family,
yeah.
No connections to anything from his childhood years.
When he passed away, which was in May of 2021, Ashley and his wife, Kathy, agreed to wait 1 year before going to police to tell them what they knew so the case could be closed and anybody looking for him could better use their time elsewhere. But in November of 2021, before their year of waiting was over, there was a knock at the door. It was Peter Elliott, who had solved the case based on a variety of clues he had put together. So she's not the one that turned him in. The case was solved even potentially without her input.
So that's awesome. See, I was thinking that it was her who called the police and informed them, hey, I've got this guy. He was my dad and he was a bank robber that you're looking for.
Yeah.
But Peter solved the case and went to visit them without them even coming forward.
Yeah. And
right.
That's exactly what her dad, he didn't want her to be shocked by that. So thankfully he told her and she wasn't shocked.
I think that's, you know, just great foresight from her dad, even
absolutely.
Though, you know, so obviously with new technology, it was easier to track down some records. Elliot discovered that there was a man with the same birthday, but it was a different year, but the guy's parents' names were the same as Conrad, right? It was Ed and Ruth Beth. And they were the same.
And Ruth Beth is a fairly unique name, especially to be combined with a man of the same name. So,
oh, my bad. I said Ruth Beth, but yeah, it's Ruth Beth. So Elliot was able to get a hold of bank records that Thomas Randall was using, and he was able to look at the old signature from Ted and realize that they're the same. They're an exact match. And then he started looking into Thomas Randall because someone had anonymously mailed in his obituary with a note that said this person could be Ted Conrad. Although Elliot may know the identity of the person providing that note, it has not been made public. One of the first things that he said to Ashley and Kathy when he visited them was that they would not be charged for anything, no matter how much they knew or how much they had found out. Which, I mean, had to be good to hear, right?
It did, but they had been sitting on the information of where a known fugitive was living and knew what he had done, and they didn't reveal that. So they were essentially, at least for a couple months, harboring a fugitive.
So he had died, and it was just a couple of months after his death that Elliot shows
up. 6 months.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I think I would have probably let the police know, hey, you can stop your active search. My dad confessed on his deathbed.
But should they have been held accountable for not doing that?
I don't know. They should have at least got a stern talking to.
Yeah, you would think. And they both say that knowing about Ted's real identity and his actions changes nothing about how they feel about him. Ashley told CBC Radio, I told him that I looked him up and I knew what happened in July of 69, but that did not change how I felt about him, and it didn't change how I looked at him. He was still my dad and I love him, which I totally get. You're going to have those questions and you're going to wonder what other secrets may be there, but he's still the man that had raised her. While she was shocked, Ashley felt like there was a lot of evidence that had lined up looking back at even her life with him. First of all, he had changed his name to Thomas, which if you remember the movie title we talked about, the Thomas Crown Affair. He changed his name to Thomas after doing this. Secondly, he always wore a beard, and anytime he went out in public, he wore a baseball hat. Now, I can go out to local areas here with my hat on and people don't recognize me because that's not what they're used to. So that is a pretty good disguise, especially if you grow facial hair on top of it. Upon investigation, she saw that before the heist, he had always been clean shaven. So she believed that this beard was another way that he was trying to hide from authorities. He never left the country, even though his family kind of begged him to. He just told them that he never wanted to leave the country. So he never had a passport, and obviously he couldn't get one because any documents that he had could not be verified as far as his birth certificate and those kinds of things. So he handled this really well.
Yeah, there's really no evidence, at least public evidence, of what Ted did with his money. His family, you know, was really never wealthy, and they even filed for bankruptcy at one point. So pretty safe to say that he didn't like invest that money and living comfortably off of it. When he passed away, Ashley and Kathy were left with nothing but debt. And that included $160,000 in credit card debt and a ton of questions about who this special man really was. $160,000 in credit card debt. Like, that made me almost have a panic attack to hear that.
That's a mountain of debt. I can't imagine the fees and interest on that. Like, how are you ever going to get out from under that? Unless you rob a bank.
Yeah. I mean, golly, stick some of that money somewhere, maybe a bank vault.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he did with it.
The longer the mystery grew in the Cleveland area, the more Ted Conrad became like a hero, like a Robin Hood character, even though we have no clue about what he used the money or if it even helped anybody other than himself. Peter Elliott insists that his family has always viewed Ted as a thief, never a folk hero. And again, that's about the Elliott family, because they were the family that was chasing down this Robin Hood of the Cleveland area.
Now, I was made aware of this case several weeks ago. My wife had sent me a TikTok. You sent me a TikTok. And in the midst of my research, I discovered that Ashley is continuing to investigate her father's actions, his motivations, and his childhood. She is partnered with a journalist, and she's going around interviewing people from Ted's past in hopes of finding out how this entire ordeal happened and if it was really just based off of a movie. You can hear a lot of these interviews on her podcast. It's called Smokescreen, My Fugitive Dad. New episodes are still being released. Unless you subscribe to the Binge Network, then you can have them all at once. It's fascinating to look back at the two people in one that we have in this story. How were Ted Conrad and Tom Randall alike? How were they different? Was the motivation really just to see if he could get away with it? And what happened to the money? You're right, this is cool, and the answers we got, but it almost leaves more questions now that we know who he is. Who sent the note to Peter Elliott? Was it Ashley? Was it her mom? Did somebody else know? While the story brings some closure to the Elliott family, it's still only the beginning for Ashley and the rest of her family and Ted's childhood family now finding out that he did live into his 70s before passing away, and everybody's finding out the truth at the same time.
I wonder what they thought about Ted. You know, like,
yeah.
Did they just assume he was murdered? I mean, like, I don't know, man. It's wild. I would like to know more about his family of origin. Like, did he have a mom and dad who loved him, who didn't know what happened to their son?
Yeah. Or was he secretly communicating? That's not come out publicly. So I'm led to believe that's not what happened. One story that came out about when Peter Elliott showed up at Ashley's house, it's such a baller move. Apparently he knocked at the door, and when she opened it, the first words he said to her were, "I think you know why we're here." And I just think,
so I wonder what made him suspect that she did know.
Yeah. That's a great question.
Because I mean, it very well could have been that he went to his death without telling her.
Right.
So I wonder what made him think she knew.
Yeah. It may have just been, I don't know. I think if you're harboring that kind of knowledge and then somebody from the U.S. Marshal Service shows up at your door, you may just give a sigh of relief. Like, yeah, finally, I don't have this burden anymore.
Personally, I think Ashley herself sent the letter to Conrad. Yeah. Sorry, Elliot.
Yeah, so she may have been expecting him. So some questions I got for you, John. Is this more impressive or is this evil? Obviously, he broke laws and he changed his identity and people were hurt in that he was missing from people's lives and he had childhood friends and family, but I don't know. Like, I feel the same way about D.B. Cooper. I feel like this is pretty much the same story, except we have an ending to this one.
Is it a stretch to say that this is almost a victimless crime? Whoever owned the bank lost, in my mind, temporarily $215,000.
Probably had
because
insurance.
That money is insured.
Yeah.
So the bank owner, probably a small bump in the road. You know, it's not convenient, but you got your money back. None of your customers were affected by this. So, I don't know. You don't want people stealing from your bank every day, but no one personally was affected. Like, nobody actually lost money. Is that
right?
Am I ignorant in thinking that?
I've tried to think about that same thing as well. Certainly people had to go through trouble of filing the insurance and doing the paperwork. And there was lots of time that law enforcement put in looking for him, lots of airtime on television and things. So he cost people time, but I don't know that he cost people money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he definitely cost taxpayers money because it was a 50-year investigation. But I mean, it wasn't like we were hiring the Elliott family specifically for right. this one case.
They were going to be
they
working
had
anyway.
Other cases. So I don't know, man. I personally know it's probably not a very popular opinion, but this is just impressive.
It's
that,
pretty
that
impressive.
You could go your whole life. Now, I will say there has to be psychological impacts on Conrad, right? I mean, how can you live 50 years presumably looking over your shoulder at least for the first 10 years?
Can't fathom what that was.
And he obviously didn't forget about it because he knew that he needed to protect his daughter in case somebody ever started looking for him and went to her.
And I wonder if there were other times when he was really close to telling her or somebody else. And this is we see deathbed confessions all the time. Like 10 people have said they're D.B. Cooper. We hear people confessing about their knowledge of the JFK assassination. This deathbed confession, it was a couple months, but it is a deathbed confession by definition, I think. Like, it was readily provable. Like, she went to the Google machine and found out immediately that it was true. So I find that pretty fascinating. John, we covered the McDonald's monopoly scandal several years ago, and there was a local car salesman that was involved in that.
I see that on my notes.
I bought a car from him.
Remember who this is.
I bought a car from him. And we know people that work at car dealerships that are wonderful people. But does it take, I don't know, does that role take somebody with the confidence that's necessary to sell a car and confident enough to try to get away with a scandal? That overlap occurred to me.
I feel like what you're loosely saying is that all car salesmen are con artists.
I'm not. I specifically said we know people that are wonderful people, but the skill set overlaps a bit. Yeah. Can we acknowledge that?
Yeah, I mean, I still think you're calling them con artists, but that they don't con people other than in the selling of their cars. No, I'm saying that tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
But, well, I want to talk to you off the air about who this person was, but man, I don't know.
Should Ashley or Kathy been charged at all with anything? Yeah.
No, I mean, I want to know if Kathy was really ignorant to all this. If I married my wife, Sarepta, and she told me, I don't have any family, I am just completely alone in life. Like, what's up with that?
Yeah,
Why don't you have anybody in your life?
I don't know if I'd marry that person without, like, you have to know they're keeping stuff from you. And that's a level of trust you have to.
Unless they tell me I was an orphan and I was raised on the streets. Like, I don't know. It's just so unbelievable that I feel like my heart says Kathy knew or at least suspected something.
Yeah.
But maybe she didn't. Maybe Ted was the best con man ever.
Maybe he was. He certainly got away with this. The only shortcoming here is we don't know what happened to the money. And maybe, I don't know, maybe Ashley's going to find it. We'll see. Maybe it's going to be like a national treasure type heist
movie.
Maybe
she got an inheritance of $1.7 million. I mean, it's safe to assume that he traveled because we did get postcards or some kind of letters from Los Angeles. So did he travel there or did he somehow pay somebody to mail stuff from there to throw off the scent? He was in Washington, D.C. So, I don't know, if you're traveling all over the place for a couple of years, it's easy to blow through some money.
Yeah, could have eaten it.
And obviously
really
he picked up golf, and that's not cheap.
That's not cheap, and he got good at it, so he probably played a lot.
Probably played every day.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a good one, guys. We appreciate you hanging out with us. And we appreciate all that you do to support the show. Supporting our sponsors is a big piece of that, as well as ratings and reviews and getting into our bonus content over on Patreon. And we appreciate all you that already do these things. If not, now's a great time to start.
We love you guys. And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.